tradition of Basa B'Cholav is recorded in the Chumash three different places. The Pasuk appears three times. Rashi, in his commentary on Chumash, quotes the view of one of the Tanaim. This is not the universal view. This is the view of one of the Tanaim. That the reason why it appears three times is because each Pasuk is referring to a different aspect of the prohibition of Basa B'Cholav. One Pasuk is referring to the prohibition to cook meat and milk together. You're not permitted to cook meat and milk together. Even if you're going to feed it to a non-Jew, someone, let's say, he's in the army, and he cooks, and none of the religious people are going to eat his basa b'cholav anyway. It's a nisa bishul basa b'cholav. Then the second pasuk is referring to eating basa b'cholav. It's also b'achila. And the third pasuk tells us that not only is it also b'achila, it's also b'hanoah. Also b'hanoah, we spoke in the past, if a person by mistake cooks some non-kosher food, so you can give it to your cleaning lady, you can give it to a non-Jewish neighbor. If it's muta b'hanoah, but if by mistake you cooked some basa b'cholav and it's also b'hanoah, so then you're not permitted to give it to a non-Jew, because they certainly will give you something back in exchange, a favor in exchange, or a better service or something. So it's important to keep in mind the three prohibitions. Usually we don't make such an issue about determining exactly what is prohibited biblically and what is prohibited rabbinically, but here it makes a difference. In the Shulchan Aruch, the accepted opinion that everybody agrees, the accepted opinion is that only basa b'cholav that's prohibited min ha-Torah, biblically prohibited, is also in all three. Asa b'bishul, asa b'achila, and asa b'hanoah. If you have basa b'cholav that's only prohibited mid-rabbanon, there's no prohibition to do the bishul, and there's no prohibition b'hanoah. So take, for example, chicken. The Gemara has a machlekes hatanoim, and the accepted opinion in Shulchan Aruch is that chicken with milk is only midirabbanan. Tosis wants to paska not so. Tosis wants to adopt the position that chicken with milk is awesome and antara. But by the time it came to the Shulchan Aruch, the Tosis was not accepted. The Gemara has one opinion that you don't have to wait. Oifu gvina necholam bafi korin. You can have chicken and then you can have cheese right afterwards, and you don't have to wait at all. So Tosfos explains the reason for that opinion is because chicken and milk is only midirabbanan, so you don't have to have so many harchokas that you have to wait in between. But Tosfos says since that's not the common practice, obviously everybody waits in between chicken and cheese just the same amount of time that they wait between meat and milk. So that demonstrates that we haven't accepted that opinion, that we pass on a chicken with milk is awesome on a turf. But that's not the accepted opinion. The Shulchan Aruch, the accepted view is that chicken and milk is only awesome in the Rabbanan. So therefore, if someone is working in the army or in a hospital or in a restaurant, whatever, and they ask him to fry chicken and butter, so he's permitted to, if it's going to be given to a non-Jew. So there's no issue of lifnei. It's going to be given to a Jew who doesn't keep kosher anyway. So that's what he ordered. So there's no din of lifnei in such a situation. So the din is that it's muta b'bishul. What else? If you have...
one of the patients or one of the restaurant patrons may be Jewish, and you would have a
problem. You would have a question of lifneiva l'sita mirshol. So the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is that the prohibition of lifneiva deraisa only applies if it's betray every dinara, if we're on two different sides of the river. The fellow who wants to sin is on the other side of the river, and I'm over here, and he asks me to throw over some non-kosher food. And if I don't help him, so he can't violate this other. What if it's Berchad River and Nara both on the same side of the river, and he can get the non-kosher food without my assistance? So then we assume that there's no Issam in our Torah. That's the accepted opinion. The Rambam doesn't hold like that, but that's the way we accept in Yeriday. There's no Issar of Lifneiver min HaTorah. We assume it's only Lifneiver mid Rabbanan. So then there are exceptions to the rule. So one of the exceptions to the rule is if the person is a Mumer. He violates this Haver all the time. It's not that basically he keeps kosher. Once in a while he has a desire to eat non-kosher. He never keeps kosher. So then we say that there's no leaf neiver if it's bechad ivir denari. If I'm going to open up, let's say, a hot dog stand in a baseball game, and I'm going to encourage people, I'm selling hot dogs. So I'm going to try to encourage everybody to buy my hot dogs. I want to make a lot of money. So then you're not allowed to encourage a Jew who's not religious to buy a tray for hot dogs. That's a lifneiva where I'm initiating the aveira. I'm trying to convince them, instead of buying popcorn and Cracker Jacks, eat the tray for hot dogs. So that you're not allowed to do. But if he comes to me and he wants me to cook, he wants me to give him basa b'cholav, he's asking for it. So that's also lifneiva. So when he's initiating it, and it's b'chad ivir nara, I'm not the only store where they sell basa b'cholav, where they sell chicken fried in butter. There are other stores where he can get it, and he's a mummer, he doesn't keep kosher anyway. So then we pass on the Shulchan Aruch that there's no Isser of Lifnei either.
Even
with the Rabbanon. Yeah. Even with the Rabbanon, there's no Lifnei either.
You need all three? Do you count him or the Nara? He's initiating and it should only be an Isser de Rabbanon or even Isser de Araisa? You say chicken and butter, it's only the Rabbanon.
Basa b'cholav de Araisa is also the Bishul. So I do it out there by cooking it. So I'm not allowed to cook it. But if it's only chicken and butter, it's only Basa b'cholav de Rabbanon. So then it's Mutta b'bishul, Mutta b'hanoa. But you have a problem of Lifnei Iver if the customer is going to be a Jew. But if he's asking for this, and I'm not the only store where he can buy the chicken fried and butter in another store also.
What happens if he's not a mummer? He's just finish Shanishva, like most American Jews just don't know what's going on.
It's also called a mummer. Same thing.
Not Bishul, but when you're worried about it. So getting back to this question, do you need three that has to be in Issa de Rabbanan, or can you do an Issa
de Rabbanan? No, if it's going to be Basa B'Cholav de Araisa, it's a different problem.
Nothing to do with Basa B'Cholav.
Different case of Lifnei Iver.
Right, so is it Lifnei Iver when it's Chadei B'Din Nahara and he's initiating his Mumah?
There's no Lifnei Iver.
You
say there's no Lifnei Iver in such a case.
Is that a universal principle to apply Lifnei Iver there? Does not apply to Tino Shenishba or a Mumah?
To a mummer, if the fella has the ability to do the aver without my assistance, I'm not enabling him to do the aver. He can do the aver without me. Just that he's asking me to help him out. So if he's not religious anyway, so then there's no then the rabbis didn't introduce a chumra v'lifnei iver the rabbanon. That's the accepted opinion.
Does it make a difference if the chicken or the meat is trait to begin
with? We're going to get to that soon. Okay. If you cook, you mean, if I cook a lot of the dog food, is those who have pets, a lot of dog food is meat that's cooked with milk. So it's a question of basa b'cholav. So basa b'cholav is not only asa b'achila, it's asa b'hanoh, if it's basa b'cholav min haTorah. See, here they cook the meat with milk. It should be a shal basa b'cholav min haTorah. The only thing is that it's non-kosher meat, it's nevela meat. If you cook, let's say, horse meat with milk, so that's not an isa bishul basa b'cholav. That's just the horse meat. The prohibition of basa b'cholav is only if it's meat as opposed to chicken. Chicken is only the rabbanon. And only if it's cooked with the milk, if it's soaked with the milk, or salted with the milk, that's only basa b'cholav, the rabbanon. And it only applies if it's a kosher animal. If you take pork and you cook it in milk, so that's not going to be basa b'cholav. That'll be pork. You're not allowed to eat it because it's pork. So the question is, what if it's nevela? What if it's from a kosher animal? It's cow's milk, steers head beef, let's say. But it's nevela. So there is a discussion in the Gemara and in Shulchan Aruch regarding the issue of eini sechal alisa. That since it's already this piece of meat, there's nevela already, so perhaps the isa basa b'cholav cannot be chal on top of it. But there's no prohibition to cook nevela. There's only a prohibition to cook basa b'cholav. So regarding if someone will cook nevela meat from the A&P, someone will buy meat from the A&P, cook it in milk, so that for sure will be a prohibition. That'll be a biblical prohibition. To cook nevela meat with milk will be an isa deraisa bishul. The question is, the prohibition of eating it, maybe I should say ein isa chalalisa. The second prohibition of basa b'cholav should not take effect, should not set in on top of the initial prohibition, it's nevela anyway. So that's a question. If you'll say like that, then the dog's meat will be, the dog's food will be muta b'hano. You say that the basa b'cholav cannot set in on top of the isa nevela. So the Nadi Behuda has a commentary on the side of the Yerida that's called Dogam Lavava. So he presents such an argument, and he says if you have a big shas hatchak, you can be mekel. Most of the poskim disagree with him, and they say it's not correct. That even using the principle of eini sechal alisa, it's not going to help. And if a non-Jewish company cooked meat with milk, it will be osa b'achil and osa b'hanoa mitam basa b'cholav. And any sechal alisa doesn't help in this situation. It's not going to bring any leniency.
Excuse me, why should it be an isra chal alisa since the isra of nevela is an only isra achila? The isra bishop of basa b'chol is the isra noah. So it's not an isra chal alisa, it's a brand new isra.
Should be more of an isra. Right, so he quotes, that's exactly. So the Nadi Behuda on the side of the Yerida quotes a Pirush HaMishnayis LaHaRambam, the Rambam's commentary, the Mishnayis Krisis. The Rambam wrote in Arabic, so when it was translated into Hebrew, so every few hundred lines, the translator wrote a funny expression, V'yesh b'inyan hazeh nekuda niflah. There's a fascinating point. So this is known as the nekuda niflah of the Rambam. He has it in more than one place, he has this translation, this expression, nekuda niflah. But this one, as long as the kudin neflosa. The Rambam there increases, in the middle of the Mishnah is about an Isser Chalalisa. So the Rambam says that the Isser Hanoah, Basav Cholav, is an extension of the Isser Achila. Basically, Basav Cholav is Macholas Asuris. Some Macholas Asuris are Rasabano, some are Mutabano. So if the Isser Achila, Basav Cholav, cannot set in on top of the Isser of Nevela, then the Isser Hanoah won't set in either. So it's based on that Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah is that the Nadi Yehuda says this, and it's not accepted. The whole argument is not accepted. So again, over here it's important to determine which Basav Cholav is min HaTorah, which is midirabbanan. So we paskan halacha lemaisa that chicken and milk is only midirabbanan. If you cook liver with milk, that's a suffix in the Talmud Yerushalmi that the commentaries quote in the Shulchan Aruch. Why? Because maybe one should argue the point. Yerushalmi is misupik. Maybe covet is considered kul adam. And if you cook a dam with a cholav, that's not an isa bishul basav cholav. Dam is not considered basav. So the Yerushalmi is mesupik. Maybe there's no isa. There are rice and kovid, but we're machmer on that. Then the din is that it's only basav cholav. There are rice if you cook the meat in milk. What if you have parva milk? How can you have parva milk? So the Gemara talks about if you made cheese, so the liquid that's left behind is whey. So the Gemara talks about mecholov, that mecholov is paravim in HaTorah, and it's only milchig midirabbanon. So that would only be basav cholav derabbanon, so then it would be muta bebishon muta ba'ano, and it'll only be asav achilo. However, the accepted view in Shulchan Aruch is that there are two different levels of whey. When you first make cheese, so the whey that's left behind, the accepted opinion in Shulchan Aruch is that that's milchig min HaTorah. When you take that whey and you cook that, and then you make cheese from that, and then the liquid that's left after that, the second time around, so that's mei mecholav. That's the Rishonim coined an expression, mei mecholav. This is mamish vasadik. That's mamish vasadik. So that's considered parav min HaTorah and only milchig midirabbanan. So in such a case, it'll be muta bahanoah, muta to do it, muta to be shol, it'll only be osa b'achilo.
Is human milk parav?
Min HaTorah, human milk is parav. Yeah. Human, from a human being. And because of Marisayin, it's forbidden to cook meat with human milk.
It's right. Interesting, we're more machmir on achila than on bishul, since the Torah specifically is not to bashel.
We did it when we did bishul, yeah. It's interesting, yeah. We're more machmir on achila, even though it's not explicit.
So you can actually extract out of milk all the necessary ingredients to make it par.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. Then the milk will be paravim in HaTorah, it'll only be milchig midirabbanan. Right. It doesn't taste so good. Yeah, it doesn't taste so good. Yeah. Min HaTorah, if you milk a cow while it's alive, so that milk is milchig. If you shech the cow and then you have the milk that's left in the udder and then you remove that, so that's only milchig midirabbanan. Okay.
Doesn't mean it's par.
Min HaTorah is par, and midirabbanan it's milchig. We treated it.
I don't understand how it's the same milk.
Exactly the same milk. But once the animal is dead, the Chumash says you're not allowed to cook meat, b'chalev imo, in the milk from its mother. So its mother, we say, is labdafka from any female animal. But it has to be female animal that's alive, that can give birth to a baby. But if it's a female animal that's already dead, and then you're extracting the milk, so that's par of min HaTorah, and it's only milchig midirabbanan. Okay. No, apparently not. It doesn't have the tam basa, only there's certain parts of the animal that are not the milk, but they're also not fleshig menata. It has to have tam basa. Regarding chaya, let's say you cook deer's meat in milk, would that constitute a prohibition of basa b'cholam and atar midirabbanan? So that's also a dispute among the tanoim, like oaf, like a chicken in milk was a dispute among the tanoim. And that there's a famous problem in the Rambam. The Rambam in two places contradicts himself. In one place in Hilchas Basa and Hilchas Macholas Asuris, he writes one way, and Hilchas Mamrim he writes another way. Whether that's an Issa deraisa derabban. Also, there's a question how to read a Gemara. The Gemara talks about lo sabashel gedi b'chalev imoch, means you're not allowed to cook the meat with milk, but you shouldn't say b'chalev. You're not supposed to read it. That's incorrect. B'chalev. So the Gemara says, how do you know that it's b'chalev imoch? Maybe it's b'chalev. So the Gemara says, no, if you'd be cooking the meat with chalev, then it would be frying. Then you wouldn't call it lo sevashel, that would be called tiglin. So the Torah wouldn't use that verb to Vashel. So some Achronim understood from that Gemara that if you fry meat with butter, that's only Basa B'Cholav D'Rabban. Only time is Basa B'Cholav Manatayra is if you cooked it with liquid. But if you fried it, that's only D'Rabban. Most of the Achronim think that that's not correct, that that's not what the Gemara meant. So that's an issue.
Because we find Bishal Tava Achalta, and then we find elsewhere that in the carbon pasach is referred to as Bishal, and we know that it's slit.
That's so broiling, right?
Bishal includes other.
Is included, right? Right. Some want to say that even broiling is only the Rabbanon, and most don't accept that based on that pasuk Bishal Tava Achalta by the carbon pasach. Yeah. If you, let's say, if you don't cook the meat and the milk together, you just eat the sandwich with meat and milk together, so that's muta min haTorah, that's only forbidden by the Rabban. It's only osa min haTorah if you actually cook the two together.
What's the nature of that, the Rabban? Is it a hakka that refrain comes to two sentences, or whether the Rabban just made mitzvahs or additions that are similar to what the Torah?
No, it's because of the Gzeira. They're afraid that we'll come to violate the basic prohibition. Yeah, they're not allowed to add on unless there's a concern. They were afraid that if you'll allow people to cook chicken and milk, or if you allow people to eat the meat and milk together that were not cooked together, so the next thing you know is that they'll cook meat and milk together, which is prohibited, and eat the meat and the milk that were cooked together. What's the din if a person has a fleishik pot and he cooks milchiks in the pot? Or he has a milchik pot and he cooks fleishiks in the pot? So we assume that the fleishik bli in the pot will enter into the milchik food and it'll become basa b'cholav. Is this basa b'cholav bin haTorah? Biblically, basa b'cholav is only prohibited if you have nesina stam. If you're interested, derech bishul osra Torah, because he wants to give the flavor of the butter should enter into the meat. But over here, what do you say? A guy's cooking fleishiks in a milchik pot. That's what he wants. He wants the flavor of the milk to go. So let him throw in some butter into the milk. That's what he's doing. He's cooking fleishiks in a milchik pot. So that's a big dispute in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the Achrayim. So the most Achrayim, I thought that it should only be Madir Rabbanan, but no one asked for my opinion. So I was outvoted a few hundred years ago. So most of the big Achrayim say that this is Basa B'Cholav D'Oraisa. If it's a fleishik pot that has been used for fleishiks within the last 24 hours, and you've got to cook milchik, so it's a milchik pot that was used for milchiks within the last 24 hours, you're going to use it for fleishiks. So most assume that that will constitute Basa B'Cholav D'Oraisa. And the minority opinion is that that's only Basa B'Cholav D'Rabban. And it makes a difference. La'alocha. There's several differences.
Is it going to be less than 60?
Okay. If it turns out that you have shishim, so then it'll be mutter. It'll just be an issue of eim avat and eisel chatchil. That's
why
correct.
Why do you think the mutter is not manat
and kira bala? No. I thought that's not called derech bishul. I thought the prohibition of basa b'cholav derech is only derech bishul when you want a nesina stam. Here it happens to give a nesina stam, but that's not why people cook meat in a milchik pot. They don't have a fleishik pot, so they cook in a milchik pot. Let's say the following situation. There is a din that even certain foods are osa b'hanoah. Basa b'cholav that's biblically prohibited is osa b'hanoah. So let's say, so I'm going to have a store where I'm going to sell basa b'cholav d'oraisa. So I'm not allowed to get on there. I'm a truck driver and I'm going to make a delivery of basa b'cholav d'oraisa. So that's considered. They don't pay me for driving an empty truck. They pay me for driving, even if I don't load it and I don't take it off. If I just drive the truck that carries a tray for wine, that's also b'hanoah, or it carries basa b'cholav d'oraisa, that's also b'hanoah, and I'm salaried to drive the truck. So the Gemara says that that's a violation of getting hanoah from isuri hanoah. Let's say a person is a waiter in a restaurant, and they pay him to deliver the food to the customers. So he's getting hanoah for delivering. A person is a nurse in a hospital, so they get paid for taking care of the patients, and part of their job is that they have to give them the food. So even if they're non-Jewish patients, who are permitted to eat basa b'cholav, but I'm not allowed to get salaried for delivering the basa b'cholav to them. There's no lifne'iver, the non-Jewish patients, they're permitted to eat the basa b'cholav, but I'm Jewish, I'm not allowed to get hanoah from basa b'cholav. So getting paid to deliver the food is also considered getting hanoah. So it makes a difference. We have to establish whether we're dealing with basa b'cholav d'oraisa, basa b'cholav d'rabbanan.
That means a supermarket which owns by a Jew there is not allowed to deal in dog food.
If the dog food is cooked with milk, that's correct. We assume.
Usually it is.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're a landlord, you have a tenant who sells not kosher products. Is that a problem? I don't know. I get to rent, Mr. Tenant.
No, I rent out the apartment. He can do whatever he wants in the apartment. So he decides to use it to sell Yisuri Hano. I don't think so.
What if it's a storefront in your building?
I mean, I rent out the store for whatever he wants to use it.
Grocery.
Okay, if he wants, he can sell kosher groceries. If he decides he wants to sell Yisuri Hano, that's not my problem.
Butcher. He wants to have a butcher takeout.
Also, okay. He pays me for the right to use the apartment or for the right to use the store, but that's not, I'm not getting Hano from the Yisuri Hano.
In the beginning, Rabbi said that only when the Mumar orders it, one can't, you know, hawk it to the Mumar, but if the Mumar orders it, so why the patient in the nursing home? I'm confused. The patient in the nursing home orders a bus of a chalav meal. Why is that a problem for the? Why is the nurse any worse than the store owner who's taking an order?
There's one issue of lifting either. Then there's another issue of getting hana from Yisuri hana. So if you're dealing with basa b'chalav that's also min haTorah, so if I get paid for, I sell you basa b'chalav deraisa, so then I'm getting hana.
So
if I deliver, I'm the truck driver and I deliver it, or I'm the person who, I'm the waiter on the table, and I give him the tray for wine, and I give him the basa b'chalav, even though they're all non-Jews and they're permitted to eat the non-kosher wine. But I'm getting hana from Yisuri hana.
Rebbe brings up wine the second time. Is there really yayin today, which is really yayin nesach min haTorah?
Yayin nesach min haTorah is a question. The Rambam's opinion is that if a non-Jew pours wine for avodah zarah, that becomes also min haTorah. The Ramban disagrees with that. He thinks that even yayin nesach mamzer that they poured in front of avodah zarah, he thinks that it's only with the Ramban. But even if you should assume like the Rambam that yayin nesach means I know for sure that he poured it for avodah zarah. If they pour water for avodah zarah, they pour Coca-Cola in front of avodah zarah, also become Asa Bahano, either according to the Rambam min haTorah, according to the Rambam min haRabban. But once in a while you have real Yayin Nesach, but most of the cases we're not dealing with Yayin Nesach, we're dealing with Stam Yayin. Stam means we don't know one way or the other. The likelihood is that the non-Jew did not use it for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, but there is a far out chance that he did. So then the rabbis prohibited Bahano. They prohibited, we mentioned briefly previously, they prohibited eating food that was cooked by non-Jew, even if you see that all the ingredients are kosher, everything is kosher, kosher pots and kosher ingredients, everything. But if the food is cooked by non-Jew, so that's bishul akum, because if you're going to eat food that was cooked by non-Jew, he may enjoy it so much, he may decide to marry one of their children in order to be supplied for the rest of your life with this delicious food. It may lead to intermarriage. So they prohibited stam yeinam also. You're not permitted to drink wine that was manufactured by a non-Jewish individual because you may enjoy the wine so much, this may lead to intermarriage. Then, if that were the sole concern that it may lead to intermarriage, it should only be prohibited to drink the wine, but it should be mutabano. Bishalakum, the food that's cooked by a non-Jew, apasakum, the bread that's cooked by my next door neighbor, baked by my next door neighbor, is also bachila mutabano. So by stam yeinam, they added on an additional chumrah, because there's a far-out chance that maybe the non-Jew used it in a religious ritual to pour in front of avodah zarah, so they decided that it should even be asa b'hanoah. So if you have a non-Jew who is absolutely not involved in avodah zarah, so then the Gemara says if he handles the wine, it'll be mutah b'hanoah, it'll be asa b'achila mutah b'hanoah. So that's a question today. Many of the non-Jews that we know are not involved in nisach hayayin for avodah zarah. So the Ramah says that if you have a big hefsed meruba, so then we would be makel on the stam yeinam bizmanazah. So that means like this: let's say if the local liquor shop owes me $100,000 and then he goes bankrupt, and then he gives me $75,000 worth of tray for wine, and he says, "Take it or leave it. That's all I have. Either you take this, or I can't pay you. I have nothing else to pay." So $100,000, $75,000, a hefsed meruba. So we would be makel. What happens if there's no hefsed meruba? Let's say this season of the year, so they have in the office, they have a party at the end of the season, so they give everybody a bottle of tray for wine. So I'm going to take the bottles. What am I going to do with it? It's how much is it worth? $50. So how much can it be worth already? $50. So I should go sell it to someone else or give it to another guy. So I'm getting hana from the thing. So $50 is not, to many people, $50 to some people is a hefsed meruba. $50 to many people, there's not a hefsed meruba. So we would be machmed that we should treat it that it is also b'ano. In Shulchan Aruch, we're only mekel that b'zman hazeh, that nochrim anat b'kim b'nisuch, so we're mekel b'ano if it's a hefsed meruba.
So what do you do with it? Do you throw it out? Is it b'al kashrus?
So you don't throw it out. I live in an apartment building, so I would leave it on the table in the lobby. Whoever wants can take it. To give it to a non-Jew whom I have no shaykhis with. So that's a prohibition of matnas chinam. The Gemara learns that from the Pasuk, you're not permitted to give a matnas chinam to a non-Jew because that may lead to friendship. And to give it to a nochri hamakiro, a nochri whom I know, that's considered getting hanah because it's probably going to give me back something in exchange.
Is a matnas chinam like a Christmas tip to your doorman?
No, your doorman is a nochri whom you deal with all the time on an ongoing basis. So if you give him a tip, which he will certainly be happy about, so he'll give you a better service. So the next time UPS delivers a package, he won't say the shechtas are not in and go take it back. He'll be kind enough to take it and hold it for me. Or the mailman. The mailman, if he wants to, if I'm not home, he takes it back to the post office and I have to wait online for half an hour. And if I give him a tip, so then they'll put it under my door. Next time there's some package or some special delivery thing, he'll give it to the next door neighbor because he'll be marketed to me that I gave them a matana, so he'll give me back something in exchange.
So the principle of matanas chinam is the same thing as yayin, intermarriage, the principle about
yeah, except that the yayin is only prohibited mid rabbanon, and the matanas chinam is a biblical prohibition.
What's the source?
There's a difficult pasuk in Chumash that reads loisachanem, and it's a that's the problem. How do you translate? What is the verb lo sechanem? It's a difficult verb. Pasuk in Devarim, lo sechanem. When we'll come into Eretz Yisrael and we'll meet up with all of the non-Jewish nations who live there, so we're not allowed to sechanem. So the Gemara has three levels of interpretation, and we accept all three. All three pshatim are accepted. So the first interpretation is miloshen chinam. You're not permitted to give a matnas chinam to a non-Jew because it may lead to friendship. Then the second level of interpretation is that it's miloshen chanoya. You're not allowed to sell real estate to a non-Jew or rent real estate to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be owned by Jews. We're not supposed to give away anything to the Arabs or even sell anything to the Arabs. If it's for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, a different story. But otherwise, it's a prohibition. And then the third level of interpretation is the word tzichonim. The first is that it comes from the word chinam. Second is that it comes from the word chanoya. You shouldn't give chanoya living in Eretz Yisrael. And the third is that it comes from the word chen. Lo yisu chen b'einechem. That we shouldn't say, what a wonderful football player he is. What a wonderful book this person wrote. What a wonderful playwright he is.
What a wonderful president.
Yep. So you're not permitted to praise a non-Jew because whoever are our heroes, we're going to look up to. And we're going to follow in their footsteps. And
no, but this is not. Okay.
Let's move on.
You got to say, if you see an intelligent scientist, you got to say a bracha. If you see a head of a state, a head of a country, an important country, you got to say a bracha. Yeah. That's a difference.
It's also not be, what kind of beautiful building is a church? It's a beautiful building, the church.
Okay.
Yeah,
would this not
this be applicable in Eretz Yisrael?
Is
it applicable
in Eretz Yisrael? That's only in Eretz Yisrael. But the other two about the matnas chinam and the chen leyusachem enechem, that applies all over the world.
No, but I mean if the mitzvah was said after we were,
I don't think Mishnah is assumed not so. No, Mishnah is assumed it applies even in Chutz Lanz.
You mentioned about the wine before, leaving that on the table for a non-Jew. Okay. What if a non-frum Jew takes it?
Garnished. It's not my achrayis. It's not my achrayis. We have a rule in Shulchan Aruch, we have a rule in the Talmud that the rabbis were authorized by the Torah to make gzeiris midirabbanan. The pasuk, I think it's the concluding pasuk in Parsha Sachri most, reads, Zushmatem es mishmarti, levilti asos mechukos ha-toibay se'elu. So the rabbis understood, Zushmatem es mishmarti, asum mishmeris le-mishmarti, that the rabbis were authorized by the Torah and each individual person should make asay siog la-Torah. We should make a siog for ourselves. We should stay far away from doing averis. Not only shouldn't walk up to the cliff and lean over and assume that we're not going to fall over. So we shouldn't go to the edge of what's permissible because we may make a mistake and violate what's prohibited. So we should make a harchoka. You don't have to stay 20 miles away. It has to be within reason. So the Gemara has a rule that the rabbis were not authorized to make a gzera l'gzera. Because the pasuk says, "Shmatem es mishmarti, but lo mishmeris le mishmeris." You don't have to have a harchoke to a harchoke, which itself is only midirabbanan. So there is a famous comment over here that the Taz makes in Yerideya. He says that the chicken and milk is only prohibited midrabbanon, and it's only prohibited min haTorah if you cook the meat with the milk. If you didn't cook it together, so that's also only midrabbanon. So let's say I have a sandwich, I'll have a slice of chicken, I'll put some cheese on. So that's a double derabbanon. So double derabbanon is mutter. Hata maisa. Double derabbanon is mutter. That's the Taz. Taz writes like this. So the Shach on the side has the Nekudas HaKesef on the other day. This is the end of Simen Tzarek. The Simen that everybody usually skips. It's about the eating the udder. Who wants to eat the udder? It doesn't taste good. Of the behemoth, because it has full of milk and meat. So how do you deal with the Kal? So the Taz writes this Chiddush, and then the Shach writes on the side, it's against the Gemara, and we all know it's not correct. Why do you wait 6 hours after having chicken? Waiting 6 hours is not even a din derabbanan, it's only a minute. So what do you mean? He says that's not called the gzeira, that's a double derabbanan. They're two different things. There's a din of a trei derabbanan, a shvuz de shvuz, and hilcha shabbos that time. Sometimes we say there's an isa derabbanan, which is lower level than an Issa Deraisa. And then if something is only prohibited based on a combination of two Issurim Derabbanan, so that's a lower level, a Shvuz Deshvuz, a Trei Derabbanan. So B'makam Mitzvah, we would be Meiko, a Shvuz Deshvuz, B'makam Mitzvah. But a Gzera L'Gzera, that's Muta L'Gamre, that's a different thing. If the whole motivation to make the Gzera Derabbanan was because they were afraid that someone's going to violate an Issa Derabbanan. But over here they made each Gzera Derabbanan. They prohibited chicken, they treated chicken as if it were flesh. And then they said you're not allowed to have flesh and milk together in the same meal, even if they're not cooked together. So that each gzeirah derabbanan was instituted because of a concern that it'll lead to an issa deraisa. So here it happens to be a double derabbanan, but that's not called the gzeirah l'gzeirah. So that's the generally accepted opinion that it's not permissible to have a sandwich with chicken and cheese at the same time. Not like the Taz wrote on Yeriday. I started to say the din is we have macholas asuras, food that you're not allowed to eat. So some of them are rasa b'hanor. Basa b'cholav is rasa b'hanor. Sure, niskal. You don't have, not something that you have around the house so often. Basa b'cholav is rasa b'hanor. Chomet b'pesach is rasa b'hanor. Okay. And then most of them are cholav sasur, so muta b'hanor. The just rasa b'chil and muta b'hanor. So what if I'm going to have a non-kosher butcher shop? Is that, so it's muta b'hanor. It's muta b'hanor. So the Mishnah say, muta bano, but you're not allowed to be in that business. You're not allowed to be in that line. Schorah b'macholos asuras is prohibited. Unless, let's say, my father was not religious, and my father had a non-kosher business, and then he died, and then I yarshin this birusha, so you're not allowed to do anything. So then the Mishnah say, if it fell into my lap, or let's say I went hunting, so I'm trying to hunt a deer. And then accidentally I hunted and I caught a non-kosher animal. So you don't say you have to let it loose and throw it away, since I have the animal, so it's muta b'ano, so I can sell it to a non-Jew who's going to use it. So schor b'macholos asuris is basur, unless it's nizdamnolo, unless it fell into my lap, then it's muta. So let's say I'll have a grocery store and I'll sell non-kosher products for the non-Jews. So there's no issue of lifnei b'leisita mikshol, but you're not allowed to sell non-kosher food even to non-Jews. That's schor b'macholos asuris. Even though it's muta b'ano, you're not allowed to do schor kavua. So there are several kulas in this area. So one kula is if it's only macholos asuris derabbanon, then there's no prohibition of schor b'macholos asuris. Then it's muta. But if it's macholos asuris deraisa, then you're not allowed to. So let's say I want to open up a restaurant in the middle of Harlem. So I'm going to serve kosher. I'm going to serve meat. It doesn't have to be glatt kosher. It's going for non-Jews. You're not allowed to sell nevela tray for meat to non-Jews. That's chor b'macholos asuris. I'll have kosher meat, but it doesn't have to be glatt kosher as long as it's kosher. So that's okay. But if they're going to make basa b'cholos, so basa b'cholos is also b'anos. You're not allowed to sell it. So that was the shaila. What if they won't? We'll give instructions. We never allow them to make any basa b'cholav. That'll be asa b'hanor. But they're not going to have two sets of dishes. They're not going to have two sets of pots and pans. They'll have fleshik pots and they'll sometimes cook milchiks. They'll have milchik pots sometimes cook fleshiks. Are you dealing with basa b'cholav derais, in which case it's asa b'hanor? Or are you dealing with only basa b'cholav derabbanon? So if it's only basa b'cholav derabbanon, so it's muta b'hanor. And there's no prohibition of schor b'macholos asuris if the issur is only the rabbanon. So it's very relevant whether cooking fleishiks in the milchik pot is a din deraisa, a din derabbanon. So the accepted opinion was a long time ago that's an isa deraisa. Cooking fleshix and a milchik pot is an isa deraisa if it was used for milchiks within the last 24 hours.
Can you have the Deutsch partner to get around it?
You can sometimes have a partnership with a non-Jew to get about these Isurim, but it only works if you keep record, if you keep a record of how much money was earned, let's say for Shabbos purposes. I'm not allowed to have a business open on Shabbos. The Gemara says, if I have a non-Jewish partner, and I make up in advance, the business, the whole business, let's say we own it 50-50 or 70-30, I have 70%, he owns 30%. So I make up in advance, before we start, I say, the whole business belongs to you for all the Shabbos, you don't tell me Yom Kippur, that's part of your 50%, a part of your 30%, whatever. And then the rest of the week, we own it b'shutfus in such a way that it'll add up to your 50%. Okay. So if the nature of the business is such that we keep records, how much was earned on Shabbos and Yom Kippur and Yom Tov, and then at the end of the week, at the end of the year, we can calculate how much he's entitled to and how much I'm entitled to. So then it would be mutter, even if it's a big, obviously going to be a pain in the neck to get a bookkeeper to make a whole calculation. No one's going to do it. We're just going to divide it 50-50 or 70-30, whatever we made up in advance. But if on the books, that's the cheshbon, that the company belongs to the non-Jew for Shabbos, and records are kept, so even though the Maisa, we're not going to divide like that, we're just going to divide 50-50, that would be muta. But if you don't keep a record as to how much basav chala was sold, I'm going to say the business belongs to you for the purpose of basav chala, and for everything else it belongs to me. So they don't keep records as to what they charge money for. So then the whole that hefe wouldn't apply.
As a corporation also, how would a corporation work?
I don't think a corporation would be relevant over here, because bottom line is that I am getting hano. If it's Basa B'cholov, you're getting hano.
You know, for example, to a certain extent, if you can, say, buy shares of McDonald's or one of those fast food chains, is that allowed? And then is it only allowed only if you have a controlling share or what?
The Pashtus is that it's not allowed. If I have a share in a corporation where they're getting hano from Isuri hano, so that means I'm getting hano from Isuri hano. Pashtus is that you're not allowed to.
Yeah. That's a minimal that share there, obviously. It's a very minimal thing there. I mean, it depends there.
But I make a few dollars every year. If I make some money out of it, that means I got Hano from the Suri Hano. However many shares I have, if at the end of the year they send me a check, so that check, Dosei is getting Hano from the Suri Hano. The Gemara makes it clear that waiting 6 hours in between Fleshiks and Milchiks is not even a Din D'Rabbanan, it's a Minhog. It's a very old minhag from the days of the Gemara. One of the Amoraim in the days of the Talmud says, oh, how do I compare to my father? My father was a holy tzaddik. He would always wait 24 hours between fleshiks and milchiks. And I'm like chala bar chamra. I'm like vinegar, the son of wine. My father was wine, and I'm vinegar. I'm spoiled. I only wait 6 hours. So we're on the madrega like the vinegar, so we only wait 6 hours. Some wait 3 hours, whatever. The Gemara says he waits from one meal to the other. The Gemara doesn't say exactly how long. The Rambam says, kemo sheishos, approximately 6 hours. So because the Rambam writes Kemo Sheishos, that's why we wait 6 hours.
Why can't that be halacha? Why can't I accept that as halacha? Because the fact is, it seems like he's saying his father is machmir, whereas he's doing the bare minimum.
No, we assume, no. It's assumed that it's only a minhag. That's why the Chasam Sofer is quoted in the bottom of the page of the Eridei. So they quote the tshuva from the Chasam Sofer that in order to be, sometimes if you have an emergency situation, someone is absolutely sick and he has to drive to the hospital on Shabbos or pikuach nefesh, you have no choice. You have to even violate dinim derais. Sometimes if a person is a choyle she'en bo sakona, is not, no danger to his life, just that he's absolutely not feeling well, he can't function normally, so then you're permitted to violate certain isurim derabonim, but you're not permitted to violate isurim derais. But let's say the person just has a bellyache. He can function well. It just has some minor aches and pains, but it doesn't prevent him from functioning normally. So that's called a bori with a mechesh bialmo. So then we're not makel anything. So the Chasam Sofer says, but waiting these 6 hours, that's assumed that it's only a minhag. That was always assumed that it's only a minhag. So years ago, when a person would have, what do they call it? Ulcers. Years ago, when a person had ulcers, so they would say, you drink warm milk. I think now they say the warm milk is baloney, it doesn't help. They'll cure your ulcers, they'll treat your ulcers. But the warm milk doesn't help. But years ago, that was accepted, that you drink warm milk. So the Chasam Sofer says that if the person doesn't feel well, He doesn't have to be chol l'shem b'sakana, just he has a mechesh b'alma. So he's permitted to have milchiks within the 6 hours. But waiting 1 hour, that later poskim, the Kafar Chaim quotes this Chazam Sefer also. So he says, but waiting 1 hour, that could be that that's a din de rabbon, because that says in the Zohar, you shouldn't have fleishiks and milchiks within the same hour. B'shai tachoda. One could say that the Zohar didn't mean b'shai tachoda literally within 60 minutes. Shai tachoda means the same time. So this is a chumrah that the Kafar Chaim says that maybe waiting 1 hour is a real din de rabbanon. So that you should only be mekel if the person is really a chol l'shem b'sakon, if he's really not able to function normally.
But isn't there a difference between waiting from fleishik to milchik and milchik to fleishik?
Yeah, so waiting from milchik to fleishik, we're only machmer to wait 6 hours or 3 hours, whatever the minig is, if it's hard cheese. Hard cheese usually, we never have hard cheese. We have American cheese, that's not hard cheese. Hard cheese means cheese that was aged for 6 months. Real hard cheese. Some people have real hard cheese, okay. There are such things in America, kosher hard cheeses. But most of the cheeses that we use are not considered hard cheeses. But if you just had milchiks and you want to have fleishiks afterwards, so then you don't have to wait 6 hours. The Gemara just says you have to brush out your teeth. Well, the days of the Gemara, they didn't have toothbrush, they didn't have these kind of things, they didn't have scope. So they say you have to rinse your mouth out, you have to chew something that's going to get all the particles out from in between your teeth. So it means you have mouthwash and you have brush your teeth, right? So you get everything out.
Is that because of digestion?
I mean, why is the custom to wait 6 hours? Why the difference between first? The different explanations given in the Shulchan Aruch. Some Rishonim say because of the basa shebein hashinayim, because the meat gets caught in between the teeth. And we're not so concerned about the milk. Only the hot cheese may get caught. And others say, because the flavor of the meat is going to linger on longer. But not so much because of the basa shebein hashinayim. They give differences lahalacha. Let's say if a parent is chewing up meat in order to serve it to the child. I don't think people still do that. I don't know. So the parent is chewing the meat. They're not going to have the flavor of the meat in their body, but they're going to have the meat that's going to be caught in their teeth. So the child is going to have to wait 6 hours in that situation.
Yeah. I thought, Rabbi, that's a tablecloth. I mean, the time you would take between breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner is about 6 hours. So
right.
That's what it became. That's what the minhag. Some people have more meals, so it became 3 hours. It became 5 hours.
Yeah. The Gemara says you wait from one meal to the other. So the Rambam says that's kemoshe shos, and then the Rishonim discuss why did that custom develop to wait from one meal to the other. So they have these two explanations, either because we're concerned about the basa shebein hashinayim, about the meat that's caught in between the teeth, or because of the flavor of the meat will linger on.
Rabbeinu Tam, about eating right away in the afternoon, the basis of the Dutch minute, waiting an hour.
The Dutch minute, wait 1 hour. That's what it says in the Zohar. You wait 1 hour. The Shai Tochado.
Did Rabbeinu Tam feel that even a shah is necessary?
The Gemara says between one opinion between meat and milk, and between milk and meat, the same thing, just have to brush your teeth. But we don't follow that practice. We follow the minig of waiting from one meal to the other.
The Gemara there says, basar then maybe finish
night. Yeah.
Before, that also seems to be a din, like me tam din, below me tam
din. Yeah, if you have flesh, you shouldn't eat, if you have meat caught in your teeth, you shouldn't have milchiks at the same time. It says it does apply even after 6 hours. If the person feels that he senses that he has particles of meat caught in his teeth, he's not allowed to have milchiks until he picks them out. Once he picks out, it does not wait another 6 hours after that. The reason why we wait 6 hours, the meaning, because we assume there may be particles of meat that we're not fully aware of. So we want to wait 6 hours to make sure everything goes out.
I spoke with a scientist that the digesting of meat takes much longer than the digesting of milk or something like this one. Therefore, I mean, that they claim that. Therefore, the time...
The flavor will linger longer.
Longer.
Okay.
It's a natural process.
Mm-hmm.
The digestive process of meat, I mean, the stomach takes much longer than milk.
Mm-hmm. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Zohar, Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Yerushalmi, that if you had the fleishiks in the meal, the leftover chalif and the Shabbos dikah fleishik meal should not be used to eat in a milchik meal. If a person had milchiks in a meal, so the leftover chalif, leftover bread, should not be used with a fleishik meal. The reason being that years ago they didn't eat with forks and knives and spoons. Everybody ate with their hands until very recently. This is a modern invention. How long? 150 years ago? 200? It's a very recent. Years ago, the days of Gemara didn't have it. So a person is eating flesh, eats their flesh. Is going to be, the bread is going to be all full of flesh. So a person having milchiks, the bread is going to be all full of milchiks. So that's why in Shulchan Aruch they quote from the Yerushalmi, you shouldn't eat the leftover bread with the opposite meal. The question is this only a minhag? So maybe Bizman Hazeh that the situation changed. Maybe the minhag doesn't apply, or maybe this is a din derabbanan. Din derabbanan, so even if it's a dovish and a minyan, sof miyanachal atira, even if the circumstances changed. So it's up for discussion. What's the nature of this Yerushalmi? Is that a din or is that a minhag? But the, whatever it is, the minig developed that on Shavuos, the Ramosk in Hilcha Shavuos writes, the minig was that on Shavuos you have milchiks. What is that all about, that you have milchiks? So the Ramosk says, no, you have to have fleishiks for Simchas Yontif. So if you have first milchiks and then fleishiks, so you have to cut both chalas. You have to have one chala for the milchiks, and the leftover chala that you ate with the milchiks you can't eat, but the fleishiks, so you have to cut a separate challah for the fleishiks, and that's a zecher l'shtei alechem on Shavuos. In the Beis HaMikdash, there was a korban, there was an offering that was brought only once a year, shtei alechem. So we want to cut both challahs. The Ramos practice was that on every Shabbos and Yantar, you have lechem mishni, you have two challahs, you only cut one challah, and you eat one challah, you don't cut both. Some insist on always cutting both challahs. But others, the classical accepted position always was you only cut one of the two challahs. And on Shavuos, if you want to make a zecher l'shtei alechem, a zecher to that korban that was brought on Yom Tov Shavuos in the Beis HaMikdash, so you want to arrange the meal, the menu should be such that you have to eat both challahs. How do you arrange that? You have to have milchiks and fleishiks. So you lay one challah for the milchiks, and then you have a separate challah for the fleishiks. So that's what the Ramah interprets. That's the reason why the minig was to have milchiks. So the shaila is, but the Zohar says that you're not supposed to have milchiks and fleishiks in the same meal. By us, we can, the other way, we got to wait 6 hours. So what shaykh, 3 hours, what shaykh to eat first fleishiks, then milchiks in the same meal? What are you going to have, a pause? Someone's going to give such a long drasha in the middle of a mitzvah, chasen or something. It's not shaykh. But if you have the reverse, first you have milchiks, then you have fleishiks. So the Zohar says you shouldn't have in one meal. Now this doesn't say in the Talmud. There is no such Gemara. The Gemara, it says, you had milchiks, one half fleishiks, so you brush your teeth with Colgate, and you rinse your mouth with scope, and shite, then you can have the fleishiks. The Shaila is, if you want to be machmer like the Zohar, so you have to bench in the middle, then wash again on Shavuos. So that's a Shaila, is that proper? According to the Gemara, the benching would be a bracha sheinat tzrichon. You're really not finished eating. You want to rinse your mouth and have the fleishiks right away on Shavuos. And according to the Zohar, you're required to bench, to wash again, to say Hamoitzi again, and then to bench a second time. So according to the Talmud, according to the Talmud Bavli, that all of that should be a Gur and Bracha Shenet Zvichu.
The point so, by Shal is that if your Suda goes late, you can stop and
break it up in half.
Right away. So if there really is a halachic necessity.
Oh, so that's a Shal. If there is a halachic necessity, here there's a Kabbalistic necessity. Here the Zohar says, but the Talmud doesn't say. So that's a deal in the Malamed Lahoyal. He has a tshuva. Is one permitted to be choshish for the opinion of the Zohar? Since al pinigle, there's no problem. So is one permitted to be choshish for the view of the Zohar to bench in the middle? Is that called a halachic necessity? So that's a pilpul, whether that's proper or not.
Should be machlokes between Beis Yosef and Ramah. It's a typical machlokes.
Whether you're choshish for the Zohar or not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not discussed. It's not discussed. This case is not discussed in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara that it's not permissible to have a fleishik bread or to have milchik bread, because bread is normally parve, and if you have bread that was baked with schmaltz, so someone by mistake may eat it with milchik. So you have milk, you have milchik bread. Someone by mistake may eat it with fleishiks. Then there's a dispute in the commentaries on the bottom of the page in Shulchan Aruch. What if you have milchik bread? But it says on the wrapper that this is milchik, dairy. So is that sufficient or not? So the generally accepted opinion is that the wrapper doesn't help. After it already was baked and it cooled off already, then you're going to put on the wrapper, that doesn't help. The Chochma Sodom writes a psak from Rababala Pasveler. Rababala was the dayan in one of the villages on the outskirts of Vilna. Pasvel, I guess, is a village on the outskirts of Vilna. So a woman was baking up her chicken for Shabbos, whatever her flesh, and then she was baking her chalas at the same time, which she shouldn't have done. She shouldn't bake the chalas in the oven at the same time as the flesh. So then started the schmaltz from the flesh, rolled over into the chalas, and it made the chalas fleshig. So she ran to the dine. What does she do? She has fleshig chalas, they're treif. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to eat fleshig chalas, you're not allowed to eat milchig chalas. So the dayan said, quickly, before the challah cools down, before you take it out of the oven, take a polka, take a piece of chicken and stick it into the middle of the challah, so everyone will see that it's fleshig. If you make the hecker, if you make a hecker right away, before you finish baking it, so then it's permissible. Once it's going to cool down, then it doesn't help if you stick a polka in. You have to do something right away. So some are of the opinion that putting on a wrapper on the milchig bread is okay. One of the kashrus organizations did that many years ago. They first, because Rabbi Soloveitchik said like that. He said that his father said if you have a wrapper that says that it's milchig, is okay. So they followed Rabbi Soloveitchik's psak, and they got into such trouble that Balabatim all called him up. What are you, crazy? How can you give a heksher on milchig bread? So they kept on referring to everybody Rabbi Soloveitchik said, so they didn't believe that it was true. So they stopped, so they discontinued. So now we don't have any milchig bread. The shaila is it permissible? There are companies where they put in a little milk powder into the dough in order to have a longer shelf life. They're not really interested in giving an asinas tam, giving a flavor of milk into the bread. You have well over shishim against the milk, but it just retards the spoilage. It'll last longer. So the shaila is that a violation of eim avat anisa lechatchila? That you're not allowed to put in, you're not talking, nothing is treif over here. You're not allowed to have milchig bread, but it's not milchig bread, it's parafer bread. So some say that it's permissible to put in a little milk in the bread in a way that is going to be bottled with shishim, and you're permitted to eat it with fleshik also. And the others say, no, it's absolutely prohibited. You're not allowed to put in a little bit of milk in the bread. The generally accepted opinion is the centrist position, the centrist orthodox position, that you're allowed to mix in a little bit of milk into the bread and label it as milchig. And eat it with milchik so par of it, but to mix it, the milk and the bread, to have it with fleshik, so that's taka considered eim avat anis lechatchil.
So the OU certification on bread is always par of
it. Yeah. And if you'll have sometimes OUD, OU milchik on bread, it means that it has a little milk that's bottle b'shish. Sometimes you'll have some bread that says that it's milchik, so you should know that it's not milchik.
So if it's bottle b'shish, then it's not dairy.
Yeah, but it's not right to eat it with meat.
Well, I'm sorry?
It's not proper to eat such bread with meat. That's the accepted opinion. The middle shita is permissible to mix in milk into the dough in such a way that it'll be
bottle b'shishim. You wouldn't necessarily have to wait 6 hours after.
No, for sure you don't have to wait.
Isn't the machlokas Ashkenazim and Svardim on whether a mevat l'miso l'chatchil applies to a drabanon? I seem to recall that the position of the machaber, the position of Svardim, is that you can be mevatel nisa drabanan lechatchila.
Yes, that is correct. Yes, and Ashkenazim don't follow that. That is correct. Yeah. Yes.
I had a question. When I was younger, we had these Thomas's English muffins, and they had the OUD on them. And now I don't see as many of them. I think they've started making OU without the D. But the ones that are still OUD, what does that mean? Because I mixed it up for bread when I was younger. I didn't eat it. Luckily, I saw there was a D on it. Mm-hmm.
The Gemara says that that if you make milchig bread, the balabasta baked bread for supper. So she only baked a little bit. It's going to be eaten up for supper. See, just made a little bit, private. Not I buy in the store, a little bit. It means I only baked it at home, a small amount to eat up for supper. So that's mutter. Even if it's fleshig and milchig, that's mutter, because you only baked it for supper, a small amount. Or if you bake the bread with a funny shape, and it has a simen on it, that I know that it's fleshig, I know that it's milchig, because it has a unique shape. So then it's mutam. So the Thomas muffins, originally all the muffins were milchig.
Right.
So everybody knew that muffins are milchig, so that's permissible, it's a different
unless
kind.
Unless you didn't know, in which case you bought it, and you say, oh my gosh, it's muffin.
So now in recent years, they make, a lot of the companies make parva muffins. So now,
right. Even Thomas now makes parva.
So now the heter on the milchig muffins fell apart. Originally, the muffins could be milchig. Everybody knows muffins are milchig. But in recent years, since they make parafa muffins, so you're not allowed to eat the milchig muffins either. Rabbi Soloveitchik was of the opinion that that this gzeira derabanan against milchig bread does not only apply to bread, it applies to cake as well. So you thought that you're not allowed to have milk and cake unless you have a wrapper. Unless you have cheesecake, mama, she can smell the cheese. That's like the pulque. That's like the parva cheesecake. Yeah. So he thought that only if you have a wrapper on the outside. If you have a wrapper, it's good on the bread also. And if you don't have a wrapper, he thought it was awesome on the cake. That's not the generally accepted opinion. On the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch, they say that the Gzera de Rabbanim is only instituted on bread, which people sometimes eat together with the meat, or together with the milk. But cake, you never eat together with the milk, or together, maybe little children. Maybe you have to bribe them. They should eat the cake together with the milk, or together with the meat. But by adults, they don't eat the cake together with the flesh, or together with the milk. So the whole Gzera on fleshig, on milchig bread, or fleshy bread, was never instituted by cakes. That's the generally accepted opinion.
Is it only on the bread that's actually cut and put on the table? This is going back to the business not eating fleishik with milk on bread that was on the table. Milk bread is
leftover, yeah.
Milk meal. It's not like that from the you cut the challah, you left over with a challah loaf. Is that allowed to be eaten during the week with milk? In other words, you have the regular loaf and you cut up pieces. The loaf that you originally cut. With it's a large part, it's on the challah tray. Is that a problem eating?
Mimi weren't even handling that in the middle of the meal. That's that.
You know, do we say that it's not you weren't? I mean, that's like just because it was on the table.
Yeah, I don't think that's included. No, only what you may have touched.
Well, what about the dairy equipment kind of thing? When they have bitter chocolate, there's no milky ingredient listed on it, and.
Yeah. So dairy equipment is what the Shulchan Aruch calls not barnat. Not barnat is a Rashi Tevis. Means nice and tam, of a nice and tam. So the Gemara says like this. If I cooked, let's say, potatoes in a fleshig pot, so the potatoes don't become fleshy. I don't have to wait 6 hours. That says Befevish in the Shulchan Aruch. I remember one of the boys was learning Yeredeya, and he came home that day and he told his mother that it says in the Yeredeya that the potatoes that are cooked in a fleshig pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. So she says she doesn't believe him till daddy comes home. Daddy was an Eretz Yisrael. They're not going to believe him because they always thought you have to wait 6 hours. So that's a beferish. You don't have to wait 6 hours. So the shaila is, I cooked the potatoes in a fleshig pot, but there was no fleshigs in the pot. But there was a blia. There was a ben yomo. The pot was used for fleshigs within the last 24 hours. So the potatoes are considered fleshigs. So is the din now, am I allowed to put it on a milchik plate? So it says, yes, you're permitted to put these potatoes on a milchik plate. Are you allowed to put
hot,
butter?
Not hot.
It even says hot also.
But you just said this
blia. There's a fleshig blia. So is it permissible to put butter on top of this?
No.
So everybody knows no. Everybody knows no. So the simple reading in the Gemara is that it says that it's permissible. Why? The simple reading in the Gemara is that it's permissible. That the only time there's you're not allowed to mix meat with milk, but if it's only cooked in a fleshig pot, so then it's not considered fleshig with respect to basa b'chol. So the Ramo is machmer, we are machmer because Rashi's son-in-law, the Rivon, says in the name of Rashi, he quotes that he heard from his father-in-law that heter in the Gemara that if it doesn't go if you cook potatoes in a pot, that goes if I had burning hot potatoes that I put on a fleshig plate. But if the pot and the potatoes were both burning hot, I cooked it, or I broiled it, or I boiled it I fried it in a fleshig pot, the pot and the food were both burning hot, so then you're machmer in this issue of not banat. So the Ashkenazim are machmer on that. That's called not banat de heter. We're machmer on that. So if you have
Rashi, any comments of Rashi that points in the other direction?
No, but Tosfos is not so convinced that the son-in-law got it straight from his father-in-law. Tosfos is not happy about this. They think that he must have had wax in his ears. He wasn't listening straight. So the Ramo says the meaning Ashkenazim is that we're machmer and not banav.
But this chomer only applies to a pot that was used in the past 24 hours.
Yes.
If it was used 25 hours ago, you could put the potato next to the fleshig potato next to the cheese.
Right. So you shouldn't cook the potato in the pot that was used for fleshigs 25 hours ago. You shouldn't cook it in planning to put in butter.
But if you
cooked the potato in the pot that wasn't used for fleshigs in the last 24 hours and you're going to eat it with fleshigs, and then there's some potatoes left over, so then once it's left over ready, that wasn't your intention from the very beginning, so then you're allowed to put butter in. That says in Shulchan Aruch Yelata.
What if you put butter in the pot itself? After 25 hours, if you put butter in the pot itself?
We insist on. Right, right. So we mentioned once. The Gemara says that Minat Torah a pot is only treif within the first, let's say I cooked chazer in a pot. So the pot is only considered treif within the first 24 hours. After 24 hours go by, Minat Torah, you don't have to kasha the pot. It's only needed midirabbanan to kasha the pot. So there was a minority opinion in the days of the Rishonim that that gzerah derabbanan only applies by Yisurah Bola, if you have treifits. But by Heterah Bola, by everything is kosher, you don't have to have two sets of dishes. You only have one set of dishes. And he put a label on each pot, on each plate, on each fork. When was the last time it was used for flesh except for milk? That's Rabbi Aaron Alevi. And the students were pleading with him. Rebbe, we know that you're right. 100% right. But everybody says you're not picarious. Everybody says you're doing wrong. So he says, right is right. He doesn't care what everybody says. He's going to do it the right way. So this opinion has not been accepted. However, they do quote this opinion to be mitzarf with other opinions. That's where Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva that the grandparents died years ago and they finally give me a set of dishes. The grandparents were kosher, but no one remembers whether this was fleishig and milchig. And it's China. So you can't even kasher it. So what do you do? So Moshe Feinstein says, well, according to Rabbi Aaron Alevi, you only have to wait 24 hours. So he waited already 24 hours. We don't follow Rabbi Aaron Alevi. So the Chacham Tzvi says if you wait 12 months, you never have to kasher any treifer pot. So we don't follow the Chacham Tzvi either. But it's a mitzarif that over here. And then there's a third opinion, the Baal Ha'ita, who says that even though you can't kasher China dishes, but if it's the dish hasn't been used in 24 hours, so then you can do Hagola three times. If you dip the pot into, if you dip the china dish into three different pots, not to dip it three times into the same pot of burning hot water, it means to dip it into three different pots. So we don't follow Rabbana, we don't follow the Baal Ha'ita either, but he says in this situation where you have the combination of all three, and it may be that it is fleishig, we're not sure. Maybe this set is fleishig, we're not sure that it's fleishig or milchig. So he says if you do Hagola three times, he would be makel to use it for whatever you want to use it for. So fleishig. The Gemara says that the Klicheres, says in the Chumash, Hatara hid al Klicheres, that Hagola doesn't help. So it doesn't mean Hagola absolutely doesn't help. So the Rishonim understood, we're not sure. Hagola maybe helps, maybe doesn't help. So maybe the Hagola takes out part of the Belia, doesn't take out all. So if you do Hagola three times, so then he says that this is based on the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, if you have a treifa pot that's only treif because of tebel de rabbanon, so then if you do hagola three times it's good. So the baluit extended it to any yisad de rabbanon, any treifa kli that hasn't been used in the last 24 hours only awesome de rabbanon, so hagola three times helps. So we don't accept that baluit. The tour disagrees, we follow the tour. But if you have such a situation when you have a combination of different factors, so you should ask the rabbi, and the rabbi will be happy to come up with some kind of a heta. Yeah, every so often Rabbi Kivega has such a tshuva also. To be a mitzarf difference, not in Mahaka.
China from
We usually assume that China can't be kashut. So the question is, maybe you do Hagola three times. So you gotta figure out how many tzadim lahakal there are and what the situation is. Rabbi Soloveitchik said it depends who's asking the shayla. Let's say Bali Tshuva, they want to make their home kosher. So if they're wealthy people, so you tell them they should throw out all the dishes. They don't want to, so tell them they can go somewhere. We don't, that's not our promise. But if they're poor people and they became Bali Tshuva, so you have to use all the coolest on the books and some more. So he said you have to be a mitzarf different startup model. So in each case you have to figure out what possibilities there are to be made.
Today's China is glazed.
Right.
Doesn't that affect it?
Moshe Feinstein raises the possibility that maybe because it's glazed, maybe there's no bli at all. So that's part of the combination. So there's room to work on that.
Rabbi Levy said was speaking by Clay Harris.
Any Kaylee. He any says Kaylee? He only had one, he didn't have two sets of dishes. He just had one set of dishes and he just waited 24 hours and he used it for the opposite. So we don't follow that opinion. Everybody knows there's the Magen Avraham in Hilchas Yontif, of all places. The Magen Avraham in Yeridei, you won't find this. The Magen Avraham in Hilchas Yontif quotes a minig that you don't kasha from fleishik to milchig or from milchig to fleishik. You only kasha from treif to kosher. Why? Because you get all mixed up. Right, so the Mishnah Berurah quotes this, so he quotes the Chasam Sefer, that if it's Pesach and you want a kasher to use it for Pesach, so once you're kashering already, once we allow him to kasher for Pesach, then you can switch from fleshik to milchik and milchik to fleshik. Or if it's before Pesach and you really need it, so the minig is that you make a treif, you have a milchik set of whatever, china, you can't kasher, let's say forks and knives or pots and pans, whatever. So you make a treif, and then you can kasher it. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, the Sfardim never had such a minig. The Magen Avraham calls this a minig that was developed by the Ashkenazim. The Sfardim never had such a minig. Aruch HaShulchan claims the Ashkenazim never had such a minig either. He denies the whole thing. He says he doesn't think there is such a minig. It just never came up. We discussed already, I think, a month ago, what happens if this was supposed to be a parva pot, and then by mistake, the wife wasn't home, and the husband made it milchik by mistake. It was supposed to be a parva knife, and the husband made it milchik, a fleshik, whatever. The wife made it fleshik, and milchik by mistake. So what's the din? So the Darkei Tshuva, the Minkacha, who's always machmar and everything, so he quotes Maru Haroa that he knew in Europe. He said they were all mekel. He said if it became milchig or fleshig by mistake, it was really supposed to be parva, then he says that the minig, not the kasha, from fleshig to milchig to parva doesn't apply. Rav Moshe Feinstein is very machmar on this. Rav Moshe says not the kasha from fleshig to milchig, milchig to fleshig. He claims indeed the Gemara. He interprets the Gemara, that's the Asa Medina. And what the Magen Avraham says is a minig that you don't kashem from fleshik to milchik or fleshik to parve, that's even if it just became fleshik accidentally. But I don't think that's the generally accepted practice. I think the practice is like the Minkacha wrote in the Mincha Saluza, in the Darkei Tshuva, that whatever just became fleshik and milchik by mistake, you don't have this minig at all, then you can't kashem from one to the other. Exactly how do you
kashem from one to the other?
If it became, it was supposed to be a par of a knife, and I made it fleshig by mistake. I didn't realize it was supposed to be par of it. I made it fleshig by mistake. So then the practice is that we would kasha. Yeah. Exactly how do you kasha? So the rule is, the Gemara has the rule, kibola kach polta. However the bliya entered, that's how you get it out. So if, let's say, I have a grill, and I used it to broil non-kosher hot dogs or something. So now I want to make it kosher, so you can't do a hagola, you have to do a libun, you have to burn it out. You have to burn it, the libun is, you have to heat it up till 950 degrees, it's pretty hot. If it's a pot that I cooked a tray for soup in, and there was liquid there, so then you don't have to burn it till 950 degrees, the whole thing is going to get burnt. You can just kosher it by doing hagola. And if, let's say, I have a pot that became treif by having, let's say it became chometzdik, by having chometzdik a pickle soaked there, have some chometz soak in the pot, vinegar soak in the pot. So then we say that mila v'yirig imo yamim v'hop. If the whole bli was only ayidei kovish, then you can get the bli out ayidei kovish, but not kovish 24 hours, you have to leave water in there for a little over 24 hours, then change the water, then leave the second time, and the third time you have to leave water three times 24 hours. So that
by accident, you're saying you can kosher if there was an accident with the pot was made into places or milk.
Right.
You can kosher. But what about the practical ramifications of the confusion? That may be mistaken for the other side.
Right. So we assume that since this was really originally initially designated as a parva knife, a parva pot, and someone made a mistake, once they made a mistake. Not they made a mistake for months and months and months. They made a mistake once. So you don't say that once you made a mistake, you're stuck, it has to remain a fleshik kli and you can't kasha. No, this was initially intended to be a parva pot or a parva knife, so then you can kasha. So the question is, how do you kasha already? So there really should have been three different ways to kasha. If you have a bliya enters ayidei kovush, bali chamin, it's a bliya betzayin, ayidei kovush, by soaking 24 hours, so then the din should be, you can soak it three times, each time 24 hours, and get the bliya out. If it's a bliya ayidei broiling, then you have to have dafka libun. If it's a bliya by cooking, then you should need hagola. So the accepted opinion is that the Gemara says on Les Daf Maseches Avodah Zarah, if you have hetera bola, let's see over here, I have a grill where I broiled the cheese, kosher cheese. I have a grill where I broiled the fleshiks. So even though if it would have been non-kosher meat, you would need libun, you would have to burn it till it reaches 950 degrees Fahrenheit. But since it's a terabola, you're not talking about treifis, talking about it was a fleshy grill, you want to make it parva. Either you made it fleshy by mistake. It was supposed to be a milchi grill. They have two grills, one for fleshy and one for milchi, and the husband made a mistake and he used the fleshy grill. So if you have to kasher it, so the din is that you don't need the libun, hagala would be sufficient, because since it's a terabala, so the requirement for libun doesn't exist.
There's hagala three times?
No. Libun is where you have.
No, hagala, I mean, you said.
Hagala normally do once. Hagala you do once. If it's a kli cheres, if it's a china dish, and the Chumash says that hagala doesn't help on china, so then in rare cases we would permit one to do hagala three times.
So does the same have to apply if you made a milkix pot fleshix accidentally or not? In other words, it's not a part of the pot originally, it was a milkix pot.
Yeah.
You accidentally made it a fleshix pot. So the same heter would apply that you're allowed to kasher it.
Right. Correct.
And there's no confusion involved.
No, because it was always designated as the reverse.
And it's still considered hetera bala.
It depends. If I cooked flesh in a milchik pot after 24 hours, so then it's fleshig and milchik. It's not basa b'cholav. If I cooked the fleshigs in the pot within 24 hours, then it just became basa b'cholav. Then it's isura bola. So if I cooked with soup, with liquids, so then it's hagola. But if I broiled, let's say, I broiled cheese on a grill that was fleshig within the last 24 hours, so now the grill becomes basa b'cholav. That's isura bola. So then you have to do libun. Then you'll be stuck. You have to do libun.
Can I at least use like the more stringent temperature? Like for example, if something requires hagala, I could use libun instead.
Sure.
And the same thing.
Whenever something is sufficient with hagala, so we don't even require. If you want to do libun instead, it's easier for our purposes. If we don't require libun chomer 950 degrees, we would say it's sufficient. The Ramah says sufficient with libun kal. Libun kal is 550 degrees.
Wait. So in terms of also found in the kashrut kibush. For something which was kavush, like instead of the filling for 3 days, you know, filling in 24, I could technically do hagala.
Hagala, right. Right. Let's say it's soon before Pesach, and I don't have 72 hours to do milav yirigil yom. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, you can do hagala. That's how we pass. You can do hagala. Kavush means if you have glasses that you use for chametz, that became chametz dik because you had cold food in it, but the cold liquid was sitting there for more than 24 hours. So that's called kavush, when you have liquid soaking for more than 24 hours. Just a word about fish and meat. A few words about fish and meat. Okay. In the days of the Gemara, it was assumed that this was unhealthy. If you had meat and fish that were cooked together, it was assumed that this would be extremely unhealthy. How did they get this? They probably got it from the doctors of their time, I assume so. The rabbis were not scientists, they were not doctors. So all the information they got, Al Pi Pashtus, was from the scientists of their time. So this was assumed to be a sakana. If you eat fish and meat that were cooked together, this is assumed to be a sakana. A person may develop tzaras. The Magen Avraham lived in the 1600s, and he says he has never heard in recent years that any doctor said that there's any sakana. So he says, no more sakana. Whatever sakana say in the Gemara, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to consult the doctors of your time. The later poskim after the Magen Avraham are not so convinced that the doctors of our times know better as far as this is concerned. So they're concerned about this, so they say we should still be concerned. You're not allowed to, bottom line, you're not allowed to, this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch in the second chelik Yeridah. There's a sim at the beginning of the second chelik, things that you're not allowed to do, mishum sakana. You shouldn't drink water from a flowing river at night when it's dark and you can't see, you may be swallowing some bugs. It's unhealthy. Maybe swallowing amoeba or something that you may get sick from. So they have a whole list of things that you shouldn't do mishum sakana. So they mentioned if you have fish and meat that were cooked together, we're concerned that that may be sakana. So that's why most are still concerned about this. What if you have a situation where the fish flavoring that you put into the meat is batel b'shishim? Is that a concern or not? So some say, what do you mean? Sakana, the bitl b'shishim, the principle of bitl b'shishim is only by things that are non-kosher. But if something is poison, what does it help if it's bitl b'shishim? If it's a sakana, doesn't it? So the Nadi Behuda says that since the Magen Avraham says the whole chashash doesn't apply today, even though we don't follow that Magen Avraham, but if you have shishim against it, so it's like a sex faker, say things there, you don't have to be worried. If you have a little bit of fish, there's bitl b'shishim in the meat, and it's bizman hazeh, the doctors think there's no sakana. So he thinks that it's no problem. There was an opinion that just like you're not supposed to have, it's a sakana to have meat that was cooked together with fish, similarly there's a sakana if you have fish that was cooked with milk. Everybody fries fish with butter. Yeah, everybody eats that. So the Shach says that this is a misprint. The one who wrote like that is a mistake. It's a Torah cipher. It's a misprint. But some people are so concerned about their health that they would be careful about that too. So it's a little humorous that maybe 20 years ago, the Belzer Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael broke off from the Eidach Haredes, from the Badatz. Why did they break off? We all know why they broke off. The Badatz doesn't allow anyone to take a penny from the government. The Israeli government. Not allowed to take any money. So the Belz built the whole temple there. They took millions of dollars from the government. So they had to break off in the Eidach Haredes. So they started printing their own newspaper. They were printing every week their own newspaper. So in the first and the second editions, they had a farenfizer. Why? Woohoo? Why did they break off in the Eidach Haredes? What's wrong? They had to make their own bezin for Dinei Torah and for Gitna, Chalitzas and everything, Hashgachas, everything different. Why? So they didn't say the simple explanation because they wanted to take money from the Israeli government. They said because the Eidach Haredes gives a Hashgacha on restaurants where Rachmana Litzlan, they fry fish with butter. You're not allowed to do that. It's unhealthy. So that's why that's the real reason why the Belzer broke off from the Eidach Haredes and they don't permit it. Yeah. Okay, usually we assume that if I have a piece of tray for food and I cut it with a knife, so the knife, if everything is cold, it doesn't become tray. If I put a piece of tray for food on a plate and everything is cold, it doesn't make a tray. There are exceptions to the rule. The Gemara says if you have a sharp knife, a durkid sakino, and the non-kosher item is very sharp. So when you cut into it, so you have a durkid sakino together with a dova charif, so then Abliya will be present. So and then we're even machmer, there are different opinions about this, so then we're even machmer, if you have a fleshig knife that hasn't been used in 24 hours, so if you cut an onion with it, so we would be machmer that the onion became fleshig. So if you'll cook that onion together with milchiks, you'll have a problem on your hands, it may make a trash. They tell over the story, and there are different opinions in Shulchan Aruch how far this goes by the Dova Charif. So in Shulchan Aruch, we're machmer even on onions. Others say, no, only the kind of vegetable, the Gemara said, very, very sharp vegetable, onions are not sharp enough. So they have the Achrayim right over the story that once a poor woman came to Rab Chaim Balozhina on Erev Shabbos, that by mistake she cut an onion with a milchig knife, and it made a milchig, then she cooked her flesh with this onion, and everything, all the food for Shabbos is going to be treif. So Rab Chaim Balozhina felt he has to tell a woman that she's allowed to eat the flesh. He can't tell her that it's awesome. So he asked her, what color peel did the onion have? Did it have a black peel or a brown peel? So she said, none of the onions in Europe have a black peel. Had a brown peel. So he said, it's okay. So she went home, and the students were sitting around. They thought he was crazy. Where does it say in Shulchan Aruch? So he said, no, Li'olam, he doesn't agree with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says that the chumrah applies to onions. He holds that it only applies to korchel chiltis, a very sharp vegetable. Onions are not sharp enough. But he's not going to paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. But the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Eretz Yisrael. And the onions in Eretz Yisrael have black shells. And everybody knows that the black-shelled onions are sharper than brown-shelled onions. So he didn't paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is only talking about black shells. And if it's brown shells, it doesn't say. And it was a big shas hatchak that he was making. But that's a questionable heter. Classically, we usually assume that if you cut an onion with a milchig knife, so that it'll make it milchig, even if the milchig knife was not used for milchigs in the last 24 hours. It's quite a big chumrah.
Do we say anything other than onions?
Sharp things.
Or turnips.
Turnips, are they? Radishes, I think we would be machmer, yeah. Turnips, are turnips sharp?
I don't know. Somebody told me that they were machmer, that's why I was shocked.
I hardly ever eat turnips. I don't think they're sharp. I don't know. Gotta find out.
If a scientist drew a scientific study and said this knife has no flavor from meat or dairy before, would that be acceptable?
Yeah, that's a question. We use stainless steel today. So stainless steel has way less blia than all of these things that they were talking about in the days of the Gemara. So maybe we should be makel on all of these things. That's a big question. We're trying to get all the rabbonim all over the world to get together. We'll bring Moshiach. Okay, we'll vote on bringing Moshiach and then to discuss these issues.
Does the OU recognize the dairy equipment? It doesn't use it, DE. The OU doesn't distinguish between dairy and dairy equipment.
Right, they feel it'll be too confusing, that's why.
Is there a way to tell from if it says D and then you look at the ingredients and the ingredients?
No,
don't
you have to
no
call up the office. Yeah, if you call up, sometimes it says D. A lot of times it's not really milk; it's just not banat.
Is there any legitimacy to? Is there a such minhag as to waiting into the sixth hour, waiting into the third hour?
Some write such a practice. Yeah, waiting into the sixth hour. Someone I remember asked when we were studying Yeridah in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class, and someone said. We have a principle that the last day of Shiva mixes Hayam Kekuloi. If the person observes the Avelis in the morning of the seventh day, so that you call it quits. Or the morning of the 30th day, so you call it quits. So someone said, is that the reason for this practice? They said he never heard of this practice to wait into the sixth hour. He always thought you got to wait 6 full hours. But he says if there is such practices, there is no such thing as mixes Hashua Kekuloi. It's simply because they would eat fleshiks for lunch between 12 and 1, and then they would eat milchiks for supper between 6 and 7. And between 1 and 6 was a little over 5 hours. So that's why the minig developed, if there is such a minig, which he says he never heard of, that you wait into the 6th hour. Some insist you got to wait 6 full hours to the minute. And others say 5 and a half hours, others say into the 6th hour. Different, whatever
so
the minig is.
Kamoshe,
approximately 6 hours, yeah.
Is it better to use 7 hours?
What's the question?
Is it preferable to have a separate oven for milchiks and for fleshiks? Some of the people in yeshiva tell me that when their wife does the flesh or the chicken and they finish, so when they take it out from the oven, you can put your hand in the oven and touch all the walls and your hands will get all greasy. So if the walls are full of fleshik grease, so then if you're going to bake something parva, you're going to bake something milchik after it, so what you're doing in effect is you're baking fleshiks and milchiks at the same time. That says lachatchili for sure you're not allowed to do. The baked flesh and smokers at the same time. When my wife cooks, I never find any schmaltz on the walls. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that b'zach hazeh is no problem. One after the other. One after the other. So let's say if you do fleshiks and then you turn off the fire and you open up the door till everything is down to room temperature, then 2 minutes later you want to do milchiks. Moshe Feinstein was very machmer on this, and he published a tshuva about this. I'll explain. And then people tainted it's against the Shulchan Aruch, so he wrote another tshuva, printed in a later volume. So he says, I'm an old sick man, I have no koach to write any tshuvas, but they tell me that what I said is against the Shulchan Aruch, I have to defend my position. So he writes a second tshuva. Second tshuva is still not what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, so people don't understand. So what it says is the following. Let's say... if you put the kosher food in a treifa plate, it doesn't become treifa if everything is cold. So let's say I'm cooking kosher food in a pot, and I have the lid of a non-kosher pot. How does a person have a lid from a non-kosher pot? So let's say you have fleshik pots and milchik pots. I mixed up. I took a lid from a fleshik pot, I put it on top of a milchik pot, and I'm cooking milchis in the bottom. So the fleshik lid is on top. It doesn't touch the food on the bottom. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, but you have thick steam over there. So the thick steam is hevel, it's thick steam. The word hevel means thick steam. So hevel, dina kiraitiv, that's considered as if you have moisture, burning hot moisture touching the fleshig lid on top. So the fleshig blia will go into the milchig food and it'll make it the treif. And the milchig blia will go into the fleshig lid even though they're not touching because you have the thick steam. So then in other places in Shulchanah, they don't talk about hevel, they talk about zeya. Zeya means that there's always evaporation. Whenever you cook anything, there's always evaporation. So the classical poskim assume on the page, the Minkacha has this and the Darki Chivi, he's always machma about everything, but he has this cool, he quotes from the classical Achrayim, that they say there's a major difference between Hevel and Zeya, that when you have a pot that's half full, half empty of soup, so on the upper half of the pot there's going to be thick steam, so that thick steam is going to cause the flavor to go up. The milchiks is going to go into the lid and the fleshiks from the lid is going to go into the milchiks that you're cooking on the bottom. But if you're just cooking in an oven and you have invisible, you don't see thick steam in an oven, but there's always evaporation. So that evaporation, if I cook fleshik, so whatever evaporates will cause a fleshik blia to enter into the roof of the oven and the walls on the side of the oven. If you cook milchik, so the milchik blia will go in, but it doesn't succeed in bringing the treif of blia out. It's invisible evaporation. There always is evaporation. The only time it'll bring out the fleshig blia that's in the walls of the oven is if you have thick steam. So Moshe Feinstein did not distinguish between the thick steam and the invisible steam. So he's very machmer about this. But most Rabbanim are not so machmer. I remember on one occasion, Rabbi Schwab used to be the rabbi of Broye, so we used to talk about the halachic issues from time to time. So he told me that he's makel on this, and he told me a few other prominent rabbanim who are makel that they didn't follow Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's psak. That we all assume that there's a difference between the hevel and the zeya. The hevel is the thick steam, so there it'll bring down the bleed. In a microwave oven, there may be, a microwave is very tiny. In a big oven, you have vents all the time. So when you open up the oven, you never see any thick steam. In a microwave, when you open up, it's always moist on the door. So there's always moisture. I think there's always moisture that condenses. I get the impression that there is thick steam inside the microwave oven. I don't know. Someone should find out.
You can cut your microwave.
So it could be that a microwave would be more serious than an issue. But the moisture may be hot. I don't know. Let's talk a shava halacha l'maisa. Let's say.
In a microwave, nothing gets hot. None of the walls are ever hot.
Isn't that the water is being cold?
But the water gets hot. The water gets hot. So when the water evaporates, when the water hits the walls, probably the walls are not hot. But the water hits the walls, I think the moisture is hot. It probably is hot because the food is burning hot. Let's say halacha l'maisa. My boss is not Jewish, and he wants me to heat up his cheeseburger. In the microwave oven. Is that a nisa bishul basa b'cholov? Is that a nisa deraisa bishul basa b'cholov? So the Gemara says that bishul basa b'cholov only applies if you did bishul be'esh. If you cooked either with heat, directly with the fire, or toldos eish. I have a frying pan that was heated on the fire, and then the fire is turned off, but the frying pan is burning hot, and I mix together milk with meat, so that's bishul betoldos eish. Bishul be'esh when the fire is still there. The shot is by the microwave oven, this is not bishul be'esh, it's a different kind of bishul. So the Gemara seems to say that doesn't count, that would not be basa b'cholov deraisa, it would only be basa b'cholov derabbanan. So then, if it's only basa b'cholov derabbanan, so there's no issa bishul. The only thing is that Rav Moshe Feinstein claims, based on a Rashi, Rav Soloveitchik also thought the same, that the reason why bishul b'chama doesn't count as bishul, Rashi says, because ain't derech bishul b'kap, that was not the normal way to cook. Yeah, but if you have now, microwave companies are making billions of dollars. Everybody's using microwave today. So maybe since it became derech bishul, it became a normal way to cook. So maybe that would be bishul deraisa, and there would be a prohibition of bishul basa b'cholov to heat up the bosses. He's not Jewish. The boss is not Jewish. So there's not a shayla of lifnei v'desita michshol, just a shayla of bishul basa b'cholov. So that's a question, whether that would constitute an isa bishul basa b'cholov deraisa, you wouldn't be allowed to do it.
Giving
you
probably
anyway. Yeah, so nevela, cooking nevela with milk, we assume an isa bishul there certainly is. An isa bishul, Nodi Bihud only suggested that there wouldn't be an isa achila v'anor, but the bishul there certainly would be. There is a discussion of that also. If the meat was cooked already and the cheese was cooked independently, but they were never cooked together, would I say ein bishul lacha bishul, so that doesn't make it basa b'cholov deraisa? Or do you say no? Ein bishul lacha bishul means if it was already cooked basa b'cholov and I reheat it. Oh, if it may have already been cooked basa b'cholov once before. So most would assume that then it already is basa b'cholov. So then you're not creating the issur of cooking basa b'cholov is to create basa b'cholov.
The cheeseburger was made in the restaurant.
I mean, it already was basa b'cholov. If it already is basa b'cholov, so most assume that there's no prohibition to reheat it. But let's say it was never heated before. The cheese was cooked separately, and the meat, the nevela meat was cooked separately. And I'm going to be the first one that's combining them together, so then you'd have an issue.
If you could use the same oven for fleishig and melech, it's at mm-hmm. different times. What about the treifna oven using for kosher?
What about what?
Using a treif oven for kosher. What's the difference?
Right. So most assume that you can. See, Rav Moshe was very touchy about kashering ovens for treifas so or for Pesach. He was very machmer. And most Rabbanim are not so machmer about kashering the ovens because the walls of the oven are not touching the kosher food. The little evaporation that there is goes and is one directional. The bliya from the kosher food is going to get absorbed into the oven. But the tray for bliya that was there from the previous tender is not going to fly out in the air. As long as I use easy off and there's no treifas bien, whatever treifas is balu on the wall, so that should really not pose a problem. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was very machmer about that. He was very upset. Why all the rabbonim are makel on kashering ovens for Pesach and kashering ovens if you go to a bungalow, and it was used previously by non-Jewish people, that the previous tenant in the apartment was non-kosher. So So most Rabbanim were a little makel on that. Moshe was very machmer because he thought that the tray for Bliya will come out.
Chapter, if a person eats an onion that was cut with a fleshy knife, does he become flavored?
No, that for sure not. You don't have to wait 6 hours. That says Befevish. Even if you cooked potatoes in a fleshy pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. Even if there's a little bit of schmaltz mixed in, you don't really taste the schmaltz so explicitly. So it says also you don't have to wait 6 hours for that. Very good. Should all keep kosher.
It's recorded.